This episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co. Based in Genoa, at the heart of the Mediterranean, Amico & Co. is a family-owned refit yard with more than two centuries of maritime heritage behind it. Today, the yard is widely recognised for its work on large yachts, offering a full-service refit capability delivered largely through its own in-house teams, from paint and engineering to complex conversions and structural projects. Rooted in one of Europe's great historic port cities, Amico combines tradition, technical depth, and long-term thinking, making it a trusted partner for owners, captains, and shipyards alike. Hello, and welcome to the Boat Briefing Podcast, and a very happy new year to all of our listeners. I'm Holly Majerison, and I'm kicking off 2026 with a conversation featuring Anders Curtin, CEO of Fraser Yachts, at a point where the superyacht brokerage and charter markets are entering the year with both momentum and complexity. So drawing on Fraser's global position across sales, charter and yacht management, Anders offers a timely perspective on how the market is shaping up as the industry looks ahead to the year to come. So let's get into it. So today I'm joined by Anders Curtin, CEO of Fraser Yachts, who is approaching 3 years in the role after joining from Baltic Yachts. So today we'll be talking leadership, market insight, sustainability, and what the data is really telling us about where yachting is heading. So Anders, happy 2026. How is this year treating you so far? And have you got any resolutions?
Likewise. Happy New Year to you as well. And excited to be on the podcast. Well, we're only about 2 weeks into the new year. So far, I've been able to stick to my resolutions, which as every year are eat less and exercise more. So nothing more dramatic than that, but seems to be harder and harder to stick to as the year evolves and goes on.
Yeah, I agree. Those are good. The classic January resolutions. Mine is actually to have more industry experts on the Boat Briefing podcast. So I'd say we're off to a pretty good start, which is always nice.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Great to be here.
So I thought before we get into the market detail, it'd be good for our listeners to know a bit more about you and your role at Fraser. So you're, as I said, coming up to nearly 3 years as CEO of Fraser. So how would you describe this chapter so far?
Well, look, it's been a really exciting journey so far. And I guess in some ways, the change that I was looking for coming from a fairly small sort of niche build yard where the market in terms of just sheer number of transactions available, even theoretically on a global scale, is pretty limited to maybe about 10 or 15 projects per year that it would even make sense to bid at, and sort of in a way only needing to close two every year to keep the order stock reasonable. Sort of the greater churn that you have on the services side, that's pretty much exactly what I got. So far so good.
And how did that shipyard background kind of shape your view of brokerage?
Well, I think generally in this industry we have a very diverse group of people who operate in various nooks and crannies of the industry, if you will. But I think sort of having experience from a super yacht build yard is always going to serve you well, because first of all, the clientele is very similar in terms of background and wants and desires. And essentially you're trying to do the same thing, right? You're trying to make a client's dream come true. You're just approaching it from slightly different angles. At a custom build yard, you start with a sort of blank page, whereas whether it's a sales brokerage or charter, you have kind of a different set of parameters, but the end goal is really pretty similar. And I find the more you understand about the superyacht as a technical asset, the easier it is to have these conversations about what are the necessary next steps to get you ideally closer to that dream, whatever it may be, right?
Absolutely. And once you joined Fraser, was there anything that surprised you once you were inside the machine?
Well, look, I would say, if anything, that it was more of a positive surprise. Obviously, through my background, I knew a few of the brokers, some of them quite well. But I mean, you know, we have 230 people employed at Fraser in various capacities. So a majority of the people I did not know personally. And really that that first week, I literally joined the week of the Monaco Yacht Show 2023.
Wow.
And it was a pretty good Monaco Yacht Show for me because my calendar was pretty empty and I actually had time to walk around and talk to people. And one of the most common responses of industry friends and acquaintances when they heard about the new job was really, their spontaneous reaction was, Fraser, there are really, really good people there. And, you know, during the past 2.5 years, I've found that to be true. And if anything, the quality, commitment, grit and determination of really the entire staff and brokers has been a very, very pleasant surprise. I mean, my expectations were high, but if anything, they were even surpassed by the reality that I found on the shop floor, if you will.
That's a great accolade to the staff there. And a real luxury of time. I think joining during Monaco Yacht Show week is always, that sounds pretty full on, but if you manage to actually have quite a clear calendar, that's a great opportunity for you to just get out there and meet everyone in the industry as well.
Well, I'd be lying if I didn't admit that there was a little bit of an aspect of drinking from the fire hydrant that particular week, but we managed.
That's Monaco Yacht Show, though, in a nutshell.
Well, there you go.
Well, that leads us quite neatly into how you've been shaping the business more broadly since taking on the role. So when you joined Fraser in 2023, it was already a market leader. So I'm curious to know how you approached leadership when the business is already performing strongly. So what were your top priorities in the first sort of 12 to 18 months?
Well, I think, look, like I alluded to, we have 200 plus professionals working for us. Amongst them, I think we count almost 30 nationalities and over 40 languages spoken, and not quite 20 offices, but almost up there all over the world. Obviously, Monaco and Fort Lauderdale being sort of the dual headquarters. So certainly there has been an element of attempting to unify the corporate culture. A second thing that we've successfully managed to do is do sort of a light brand refresh, both with the visuals, how we present ourselves to the world, and the story that we tell with the new tagline, Fraser First and Foremost, being probably maybe the most visible sort of icon of that. And then, as a general manager, I think always I approach it once again through the people. My main job is really facilitating and creating an environment where the other individual team members can shine and succeed. And I think the results of the past couple of years really, really speak for themselves. We've continued to do really, really well. And maybe also going back to the heritage of the brand, you know, since 1947, we've really always been about almost sort of myopically focusing on really what's best for the client. So maybe a little bit less about grand sweeping gestures and more about just getting the job done to our client's satisfaction and ideally delight. And that's worked well for us for the past almost 80 years. And I believe really that recipe for success is going to be valid for the next decade as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be diving into some of those numbers as we go along. But let's talk about how that strategy translates into the numbers that we're seeing in the brokerage market. So if we start with brokerage, Fraser has led global brokerage sales for the 15th consecutive year, with over 48 yachts sold in 2025. You might have a more up-to-date figure than I do on that.
I can give you the year-to-date figure for 2025. It's actually 56 for us as the year concludes. So it was a good year.
Absolutely. And it's obviously showing that there's still momentum in the market, which is what we like to see. So what is driving that consistency?
You know, to me, this whole sort of niche of the industry, we in some ways we operate in an environment of extreme scarcity, right? There's, you know, depending on who you ask and how you count, there's some 6,000-7,000 super yachts in the global fleet above 30 meters, and more or less they're all unique. The owners, for sure, they're all unique, and even the charter guests, they have quite a wide diversity of, you know, what constitutes, you know, the elements of the dream vacation that they are envisioning and looking us to help them out with. But one thing that to me sort of goes through the fabric of the reasons why a given client would decide to go with broker X or brokerage company Y it really doesn't have to do with size. So I don't think anybody really goes with us because we're the biggest. What we really need to do is provide them the reasoning and the rationale and the trust that leads them to genuinely believe that we are the best partner to work with. And my firm belief is that if you succeed with that, then the sort of, you know, the size and the volume will naturally follow.
Yeah, that's interesting. Would you say certain size brackets or yacht types are outperforming others?
Well, I think if we look at the sort of the past 2 years, we see a sort of a generic rebound in all size categories. If we look specifically at the full year 25 compared to the full year 24, I think a notable thing is that in the 100 meter plus segment, there were significantly more transactions recorded last year than the year before that. It has to be said, though, that the absolute numbers in that bracket are anyways pretty small. So there's a little bit of serendipity that goes into that. And, you know, if we had a handful of sales 25 and only one in 24, some of that can be attributed to both sort of, you know, available inventory and certain restrictions there, and then just general serendipity. But even if we look at the other size brackets, we see healthy growth in pretty much all the size ranges. Obviously, the most notable jump being in the 24 to 30 meter category, which maybe is commercially, looking at the euros and dollars, less impactful, but it's sort of huge testament to overall buoyancy and, you know, client confidence in the market.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you thought that buyers were being perhaps more cautious or more confident or even just more selective.
Well, I think to some extent, all of the above, I would say that, which, you know, something that characterized both 24 and 25 was that maybe it takes a little bit longer to put the deals together than in the preceding years, but perhaps the preceding years were still a little bit affected by the sort of, for us as an industry, the positive market aberration that COVID turned out to be. So I wouldn't read huge amounts of validity into that, because the differences are sort of pretty much marginal and evening out. I would almost say that we're probably, you know, experiencing a normalization with a healthy rate of growth year on year over these past 2 years. That would be my sort of, you know, executive summary of what is it that we are seeing and feeling. And then again, going back to, even if we go down from 100 meter plus and look at sort of all the size ranges, we got to remember that we're looking at a pretty marginal market. I mean, we're looking at 500-600 brokerage yachts sold every year in these size ranges. So there's going to be natural fluctuation. So to really get a sense for where's the market going, you need to take a longer discrete interval and look at it, not 12 months, but like 36 months or even more than that, to have a sense for where's the market going. And even that trend line is looking pretty positive now if we look at 23, 24, 25.
And what I'm quite interested in, you know, what does a listing like the 78 meter Amals Energy say about the top end of the market right now?
Well, I don't know that it really makes sense to look at only individual listings. I think for the sort of larger pedigree yachts, what we've seen over the past years really is a little bit of inventory constriction. We could probably, you know, we'd like to see more fairly recent, high quality pedigree yachts for sale, just to give sort of a wider range of options for the clients who are looking for assets in that size and price range. And I think that's partially due to the fact that new builds since the pandemic, there's been quite a significant price hike there, and many of the sort of preeminent yards, they have a reasonable order stock. So you know, an equivalent yacht is both more expensive and takes a longer time to build than it did, say, you know, 5-6 years ago. And in addition to that, maybe we're moving, especially for the younger clientele, into a little bit of a less patient market. It's not quite instant gratification, but there's a high premium to a project which can be delivered quicker as opposed to 4 years from now. Right. So all these factors together, I think, shape the top end of the market.
Yeah, of course. And how important is data and business intelligence in advising clients today?
Hugely important. We have a 3-person full-time in-house intelligence team that caters both to the sort of generic management data, which obviously is hugely helpful for us for making educated decisions, but also down to the sort of, you know, individual CA proposal level in order to be able to give the client the best possible advice at any given point in time, no matter what the situation, whether you're selling or buying or considering new build, having accurate data is really key to this business.
Of course. And so sales is just one side of the picture, but Charter has arguably been the standout story recently. So Fraser recorded its best ever charter season in 2025 with more than 6,600 charter days, which is a remarkable milestone. So what's behind that growth?
Well, I'm going to go back once again to the people. I do really believe we have some of the very, very best retail charter brokers, and actually a significant part of this, the sort of whole body of business, and the growth comes from repeat clients, which is a great testament to the professionalism and meticulous attention to detail that our charter brokers have. The second thing, I do think we're a little bit in a sense industry-wide riding on a rising tide. Once again, the sort of positive market aberration that was COVID introduced a really never before seen proportion of first time charterers. And while there's been some attrition, I think maybe there's been a little bit less than we perhaps had feared or expected. So I think we got really a completely new group of clients who were introduced to chartering during the pandemic and who have since, you know, discovered the unique lifestyle that offers, and they have continued to charter.
Yeah, and is there a particular demographic? Is it, you know, younger, more diverse charterers, or people, you know, you're saying it's first time, that probably people that don't own a yacht and are entering the charter market for the first time. What's the demographic there?
Well, I mean, they're not first timers anymore by now. They are on their third or fourth charter, but I think, you know, they stuck with it, and at the same time, I think we've managed to evolve the charter fleet a little bit, so we have slightly more sort of, you know, modern yachts with all the amenities that they offer. Because one of the big sort of trend shifts, if you will, if we look at this from a 5 or 10 year perspective, is that more so than ever today, we find that charter clients, they really expect to be able to take their onshore lifestyles and pretty much port them seamlessly on board. And to do that, you almost need a relatively recent yacht that was designed with that in mind.
Of course, yeah. What are the kind of must-haves now? Because I'm also hearing that there's a lot more clients are wanting more kind of experience-led charter, which is becoming more the norm than the exception. So is it, you know, are things like water toys, are they still important to the onboard experience? Or would you say it's more about far-flung destinations? I think Greenland and Costa Rica are some popular destinations with Fraser clients now.
Well, popular would maybe, if you look at the sort of the mass of sold charter days, be a little bit of an overstatement. I think the exotic destinations are still, you know, they're outliers. So, you know, if you did 7 days of charter in Greenland 5 years ago and you do 50 last season, then obviously in percentages it's a huge growth, but it's not a great proportion of the sort of the big mass. I think the sort of the generic demand is still very much the traditional destinations in the Eastern and Western Med during the summer season and in the Caribbean during the winter. But I do think this sort of the versatility of activities offered, tenders and toys, were still in a scenario where more is more. But I think one aspect that we're clearly seeing, which is affecting the crewing side of the business, is that the sort of the versatility of talent amongst the crew is way more in focus now than it was 10 years ago. So the sort of, you know, the desired job descriptions for crews, even starting with deckhands, they are way more diverse than they used to be. You know, speaking three main European languages, being able to mix and mean martini ideally while being able to sing and accompany yourself on a musical instrument is quite normal as a job description, even for a deckhand these days. And if you have hidden skills such as being able to run a yoga class or do massage, that's even better.
Absolutely, yeah. You want somebody that's got all the skills. So how are you kind of maintaining and ensuring that that crew talent is really there?
Well, look, we've run the crew network for decades now, so I think we have a pretty well-oiled machine, and we actually do tend to interview every single member of crew before putting them forward. So once again, you're in a situation where go that little extra mile to make sure that you really and truly understand what it is that the client wants, whether they're a charter client or a, you know, yacht owner, and then try to determine the solution that you propose so that it's as likely as possible to dovetail with those wants and needs. That's really the recipe for success. Once again, there's no silver bullet. It's just, you know, a lot of hard work that goes into it behind the scenes.
Of course. And in terms of how owners are responding to this changing charter demand, how does that work? How are you informing that?
Well, you know, the intelligence team does a stellar job at putting together sort of supporting evidence for this sort of anecdotal development that we just described. And I do think we actually have quite a few cases where the owners have reached out pre-refit and just plain asked us, you know, what should I take into account if I wanted to maximize the charter potential of my current platform? And that's obviously a situation where we're eminently well-placed to advise them on, you know, what it might make sense to do, given, you know, whatever the parameters surrounding the current platform are.
And so that change in client behavior also feeds into how yachts are managed year-round. So Fraser's yacht management fleet has grown to more than 130 yachts, which is the largest in the company's history, I believe. So why is yacht management such a critical part of the business today?
Well, look, essentially, you know, there's, I guess, in some ways, a couple of pivotal points in the company's history, one being the founding of it, but that's 80 years ago now, so maybe slightly less relevant in 2026. But the second really was in the early 90s when a couple of local to Monaco businessmen acquired the Fraser brand from the Americans, and they were really among the first ones to see that the way the industry was going to evolve was that it was going to go beyond not only sales brokerage and charter. You needed other elements as well, and there again, the sort of the red thread of thinking, or the sort of the North Star, was that, you know, for a successful company within the superyacht services industry, you really need to make ownership easier, and hence yacht management. Because although there are some parallels to real estate, which most family offices or owner ecosystems are relatively comfortable at handling, there are quite some significant differences as well. Thus, yacht management, right? You have a trusted party who, you know, does it professionally, who has an good understanding, an in-depth understanding of the idiosyncrasies, specifically of owning a floating asset.
Yeah, I suppose it just suggests that owners want simplicity and accountability.
Yeah, and then perhaps even sort of, you know, one-stop shopping. It makes life easier if you can get all the services from sort of not a single point of contact, but under the same umbrella, because it's going to be different people running the yacht management program or advising you on your new build or project managing that new build or, you know, helping you charter it or getting another yacht, you know, when you have your 75th birthday and want to invite more people. You know, there's umpteen different use cases where having access to professionals from all the different business units or fields of expertise is a real genuine asset.
Absolutely. And what do owners expect from a management company in 2025 that they perhaps didn't 10 years ago?
I don't know that that's really changed. I think sort of predictability, foresight, integrity, are really probably the key drivers here. But I do think what has changed, and this is really something that goes back already to the Baltic days when we were looking at how have the products actually changed over the last 15 years. The technological complexity of a typical new build, even of a sort of, you know, moderate size today, is exponentially more complex than it was 15, 20 years ago, which means that there's a much more diverse skill set required to manage that, whether it's, you know, regulatory compliance, just keeping the systems running, or forecasting, you know, service needs.
Absolutely. And yeah, I suppose that integration just clearly supports better outcomes across the board, as you were saying. So another area where Fraser has been particularly vocal is sustainability and transparency. So it's actually been a key theme during your tenure, and Fraser was the first brokerage to adopt the Yacht Environmental Transparency Index. So why was that important?
Well, you know, as an industry, I don't think we're isolated from developments of society and the world by and large. So first of all, I guess there was a little bit of a moral aspect to it. It's just the right thing to do. But I do also firmly believe that you know, for once, doing the right thing will also long term be beneficial for the business. And the way we're seeing it actually is partially in new builds, even though whatever the end solution is, that will vary. And actually, you have to start with the use case of the yacht before you start discussing the propulsion technologies that are appropriate for that use case. But even disregarding that, sort of the various propulsion technologies that today are actually available, they are in most cases a part of the discussion, at least early on, even if the end result, if it's a world explorer that's going to do 40,000 nautical miles per year in far-flung places, then maybe traditional internal combustion engine propulsion actually is the right way to do. Whereas if it's a sort of Mediterranean island hopper that rarely will cover more than, you know, hundreds of nautical miles in one go, then you have all kinds of options that are actually, considering the use case, really, really good and viable. But sort of one great thing about the Yacht Environmental Transparency Index is that it allows you to actually do this sort of forecasting. And if you hypothetically wanted to do sort of a calculation where you get the sort of environmental return on investment comparing different solutions to each other, it allows you to do that. And that is true for a new build, but it's also true for a refit. You can actually, before you enter into the refit period, you can plug the current specifications and the way the yacht is currently set up into the Yeti tool. And then you can play around with the sensitivity analysis. You know, what if we swapped the generators out? What if we swapped the HVAC system for something that captures excess heat? What if we swapped the lighting for LED? The list goes on and on and on. And you get sort of a little bit of a sense of how does that impact the sort of environmental footprint that you leave. But with all that really being said, you know, I usually like to try to simplify things. And there's a couple of steps that most of the relatively current fleet can actually start taking yesterday to significantly reduce their environmental footprint. The first one is switch to HVO as your propulsion fuel, because that's going to reduce almost 80% of all of your emissions except particle emissions. And it's a drop-in fuel, so you can mix and match it with traditional diesel oil. Availability is increasing by the day. The second thing that you can do is favor harbors where you have green shore power available, because most of these assets, they spend 50-60% of their time moored somewhere. So if you actually feed the yacht with green shore power, that's going to have a massive impact on your emissions, right? And the third thing is just when you're cruising, accept the fact that you might knock off a knot or a knot and a half off your cruising speed. It's going to have a negligible impact on the actual experience. And everything else being equal, if you reduce the speed, you're going to significantly yet reduce your emissions. And then continue training captains and crew on good sort of sustainable circular practices on board. And then use the Yeti tool. So with these five steps, a majority of the fleet can significantly decrease their current environmental footprint. And it's a little bit like investing. If you didn't start yesterday, the best day to start is today, right?
Yeah. I mean, those are great practical steps that owners can obviously take today that genuinely start to move the needle. So that's great. Okay, so looking ahead, that brings us to the bigger picture for the industry. So as someone who is sitting at the intersection of sales, charter management, you obviously have a very unique view of the market. So what do you see as the biggest challenge facing the super yacht industry right now?
Well, honestly, I think the future is looking pretty bright. We've managed to attract new, younger clients to the industry, and it seems like the sort of, you know, age-old dream. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, to me, really the sort of the dream usually has two components. One is, you know, a freedom that you really, it's hard to achieve with any other means than something that floats and where you are the master of, you know, where do you go next? Mm. Right.
Yeah.
And the second thing is really that this is the greatest social platform on earth, because you can pick your family and friends and go to epic destinations, and you have a sort of floating luxury platform where the staff to guest ratio will forever be better than at any luxury resort. And you can make the choice yourself as to, you know, where do you wake up tomorrow morning and what do you do with your family and friends? And this sort of freedom combined with the ultimate social platform really seems to still be resonating, you know, almost 150 years after sort of leisure boating was invented.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask conversely what excites you most about the next few years, but you've actually given a very positive outlook on the industry.
Well, what excites me most is, you know, we live in an infinitely exciting time in terms of the technologies developing specifically, not only for sort of, you know, sustainable propulsion solutions, but also the technology on board. And one of the things that's really, to me, been one of the sort of smaller but really, really crucial drivers for why is this possible is, you know, Starlink. Because there was actually an owner who minted a new acronym, which is WFY, which is not a profanity. It's working from yacht. And that's actually now possible due to these technologies. You can run a board meeting from your yacht. You can keep in touch with your shoreside teams, you know, no matter what your profession is.
Yes, those onus studies are going to be used ever more, I imagine. Okay, and so as a sort of closer, as Fraser prepares for another busy boat show season, including Palm Beach, what should clients and owners be paying attention to right now? And can you give us a sneak preview of any yachts we can expect to see there?
I wish I could. We can talk again in 3-4 weeks, and I'll have a better idea of the lineup. It's being shaped as we speak. There, look, I really don't think that the fundamentals are any different for any other year. Look for partners, whether it's brokers or yacht managers or crewing consultants, that you really, really feel that you can trust, because that's going to make your life way easier and more pleasant.
Yeah. Absolutely. Top advice. Well, Anders, it's been really interesting to get your perspective across all of this, from brokerage and charter markets and how they're evolving, to obviously how you're thinking about leadership and long-term value at Fraser. It's definitely given me a good snapshot of where the industry is right now and what's shaping the next phase. So thank you very much for joining us on the Boat Briefing podcast and for sharing all your insights.
Thank you, Holly. It's been great. And maybe I'll take the opportunity to wish all the listeners a happy and prosperous 2026.
Absolutely. A happy 2026 to all. Thank you. You've been listening to a conversation with Anders Curtin, CEO of Fraser Yachts, and a fitting way to open the first Boat Briefing podcast of 2026, where the themes discussed here reflect the priorities likely to define the months ahead for the superyacht industry. This was a production of Boat International Media, sponsored by Amico & Co. That's it for this episode. Make sure to like, subscribe and follow on our social channels and newsletters. For the latest news, analysis and market insight, visit boatinternational.com, and we'll be back soon with another episode.